Welcome to the debut of the Fear Oklahoma Fear This podcast, a podcast to make your skin crawl. I would like to introduce myself and my partner. My name is Veronica Smith. I live in Stillwater, Oklahoma. I'm a psychic medium, an energy healer, a shamanic healer, and I am a lead investigator with Fear Oklahoma. This is our very first podcast. I'm also wanting to introduce you to my partner, Jamie. And we do have a guest tonight. His name is Mike McCaskill, and he is from East Texas. But before we get down to the fun stuff, we have a brief announcement before we introduce our first exciting guest. We have a raffle for a Hexfest ticket coming up in New Orleans on June 3rd of this year. The price is $25. It covers the entire event. You pay for travel and lodging, however. This is a $350 value, and it goes to a great cause, supporting the Old Dogs Friends Senior Dog Sanctuary. For more information, check the web address, www.hexfest.com. And I am waiting. My mic is calling in shortly, so he's going to be our very first guest, and we're very excited to have him. Mike had a near-death experience that left him with the ability to communicate with spirits. He is the founder of a paranormal group in East Texas that tackles extreme hauntings. And he is contacting us now, and we are waiting to hear from Mike. In the meantime, we have a paranormal conference coming up in Tyler, Texas. It is going to be held April 22nd and 23rd in Tyler, Texas. There's going to be an exciting group of guests, and Mike is going to be one of those guests. It's a pretty full lineup. We have a lot of paranormal investigators and investigative teams. We have psychic mediums. It's also going to be a combination of a paracon and a psychic fair and a horror movie screening. And it looks like Jamie is with us now. Are you in, Jamie?
Yes, I am. Hello, everybody.
Yay! All right. And Mike, are you here?
Yes, ma'am. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I'm fine. Sorry to be just a few minutes late.
Oh, no problem. No problem. Let's introduce Jamie first because she is our co-hostess.
Yes, my name is Jamie Mose. I'm from Ardmore, Oklahoma, and I'm pretty new to the paranormal field. We just started Fear Oklahoma about the first of this year, so I'm really excited to be part of the group and really excited to be partners with Veronica.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, well, Mike, I was giving a brief introduction about you. I said that you're going to be at the Tyler Paracon April 23rd in Tyler, Texas. It's what hotel is it going to be again?
Oh, you had to ask me that question. Let me get over here real quick, and I can tell you once I find the itinerary again.
Yeah, I know somebody knows. I know it's a newer hotel.
Let me get over here.
It's on Loop 323.
It is going to be at the Staybridge Suites at 2957 McDonald Road on the Loop in Tyler.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. And you're going to be a speaker there. And just to reiterate to our audience, you had a near-death experience that left you with the ability to communicate with spirits. Is that correct?
Not exactly.
It's not?
I did have a near-death experience that amplified it. I'll tell the quick story. I was about 9. I can't remember if I'm 8 or 9 years old. I've actually done the math of it. we were in between moving. My parents were moving from Georgia to Texas.
There's some kind of noise on the line. I don't know what's going on. It sounds like somebody's moving.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
I'm not sure either.
Well, I guess we have some guests.
Yeah, that's pretty strange.
Well, considering who we're talking to, not really. Go ahead, Mike.
Sounds like a bit of fumbling around going on. Somebody's in. I'm in a nice quiet place.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm just sitting at a desk.
So am I.
Oh, interesting. Well,
yeah.
Anyway, so that seemed to have calmed down. That's strange. We were in the midst of a family moving from Savannah, Georgia, into Baytown, Texas. And my parents needed to drop me off for a little while, me and my brother, at a sister's house. And she lived in a little town called Florence, Mississippi, which is just off of Jackson. That is really interesting, whatever that feedback is.
I know. Well, you know.
It's just like whenever I start telling a story, it starts. That's interesting.
It is interesting. Ooh. Okay.
I know, and it sounds like there are some voices in there, so I'm wondering if we're getting something from a radio line or something.
Possibly.
Some sort of interference.
I don't know.
It's pretty weird.
I'm in a quiet office, so.
Yes,
yeah, I'm in a very quiet room with nothing else going on.
this
anyway,
is a whole paranormal experience,
again,
man.
We were there for about 2 or 3 weeks, and in that time, just out of the blue, you know, and I was just a normal kid, right? And I mean, just.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any experiences beforehand that I have any memory of, even though I do have to say that my memory of childhood before that is pretty vague in my head. You know, sometimes, you know, the family be around and they'll talk about events and it'll trigger some things and I'll remember stuff. But other than that, kind of my memory of childhood kind of starts there.
Mm-hmm.
And, but at the end of the hallway, they had a bathroom at the end of the hallway. There's only one bathroom in the house. It was an old Victorian home. And woke up in the middle of the night one night having to go to the bathroom, and I walked out in the hallway, and at the end of that hallway was a man in a uniform, completely see-through, more like your classic misty white ghost, except for you could see the bathroom door through him, and it looked like a costume, you know me. Now, being an adult looking back over it, and I've determined that he was a Civil War soldier and definitely a Confederate officer. You tell about the type of the uniform, the sword, all that. I mean, it was all, I could see all the details from kneecaps up. I couldn't see anything kneecaps down, like almost like they either, I couldn't see them or he didn't have anything after that. And he looked at me and he picked his hands up like to reach out and to, you know, maybe grab me or hold my hand or something. And he started walking down the hallway at me. And, of course, it was pandemonium for me at that point. You know, it scared the fire out of me. And he paced, and I ran back in the room, hid under the bed, and he just paced back and forth in front of that and down that hallway for a little while. Just, it was probably like 2 or 3 minutes. Seemed like an hour to me, you know. And and it just stopped just as soon as it started. It was definitely the heavy thump of boots up and down the hallway. That event seemed to trigger some things for me, and I have experienced periodically spirit ever since. Nothing to any really strange degree. Nothing really that, you know, I would experience it just, you know, once or twice a week from there on out, sometimes every single day. And what really opened me up some more,
I heard that one. That wasn't me.
See, I keep hearing voices, and I'm not sure what's going on.
I can't make out any voices in it on my end, but definitely some kind of strange noises.
I hear like banging around, like somebody's moving boxes or something.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds, and I almost felt like I heard a dog jumping around a bit.
Yeah,
for,
I heard a dog too.
And I have a dog, but he's in a complete another room, and he's not making any noise. Pretty cool.
Well, I'm just thinking.
That's the first time
paranormal.
That I've had something happen when I'm on the phone. That seems to be a thing discussing paranormal stuff when I get on the phone with somebody. Quite particularly cases, we'll get some sort of interference. This is the first time that it's been like this, like a bunch of banging around. That's never happened that I remember.
Wow, that's interesting. Because sometimes that happens to me too. You know, I get strange things on the phones. But anyway, we'll just keep trucking through it, and eventually it'll settle down. I think.
I think whatever it is will calm itself.
Yeah.
Moving ahead, when you're talking about the car accident, I was 16 years old. Me and a friend of mine, we were being really stupid teenagers, you know, going way too fast down a road, went around a corner too quick, overcorrected when it went into a skid, rolled the truck 6 times out into a pasture. The guy who was with me said I was unresponsive and he didn't feel a pulse from me or anything. He thought I was dead and I was bleeding everywhere. And,
gosh.
And he had to kick his way out of the truck. I mean, it was a pretty horrific scene. I personally have no memory of the accident, and I have no memory some 7 or 8 hours before it or 10 to 12 hours after it. It is still gone from me.
Wow.
It was pretty traumatic. I got beat around the truck pretty bad. My story gets kind of weird. It's several hours later, you know, they had an ambulance come out, you know, remove us from the area. The friend that was with me, he sustained a couple scratches on his arm, and that was it. I took a gear shift to the side of the head, ended up with about 8 stitches above my eye, massive concussion. And the thing that I do remember is finally coming around and sitting in a hospital bed and with this lady behind me, which was a nurse, and she was pouring this cold liquid on my head. I'm freezing cold. And I'm like, man, that is cold.
Yeah.
And apparently I was very coherent. Apparently I had been doing a lot of things. I had been talking to them. I had been carrying on. And let me back up. I'm giving you this in the wrong order. Because the first memory is opening my eyes up to a very bright light. And that was just the light in the ceiling in the hospital room.
Oh, it wasn't
and
the
I
light.
The what?
It wasn't the light. The light, you know, the
no,
color
no, no.
light.
No, no, no. It was just hospital light. Yeah, just hospital
yeah.
light.
Okay.
And a doctor walking in. And he comes over, and I am completely strapped down on this on this bed, and it felt like a hard, you know, like I was laying on plywood or something. I don't know. I just knew that it was not a mattress. And I remember kind of looking around and seeing all this, you know, it looked like paraphernalia wrapped around my head, and I couldn't move my head, and I didn't even know that I was in a car accident or anything. It was just like waking up from a dream to this, you know?
Wow.
And
so were you in a coma? You must have been in a coma.
I don't know. And I just know it was all in the same night. And the doctor came in. And he, no, and it couldn't have been a coma because apparently I had been conversating with someone. Because the doctor walked in, he looked down at me, and he says, hey, I'm going to run a couple tests on you. He said, to follow up from the x-rays. And I'm like, what x-rays? He goes, apparently you have a really bad concussion. I'm like, okay, what is going on here, doc? You know, he's like, you don't know? I'm like, no. He's like, okay, we'll get to that. But right now, I need you to tell me what you feel. I'm like, okay, so say when, you know? And I remember having a pretty good headache. And he goes, well, how about that? And I didn't feel a thing. And he goes, well, what about that? And I didn't feel nothing. And and he did this like 7 or 8 times. I couldn't feel anything that he's talking about. I don't know what he's doing. And he goes, okay, I'll be right back. I was like, okay. So he leaves. And it seems like 10 seconds he comes back. I don't know how long he was gone. But he came back and he said, he goes, son, I got some bad news for you. So I need you to make sure that you stay calm. I'm like, okay. He goes, your neck is broken at the C4, I think is what he said, C4 and C5.
Oh,
and,
oh my God.
I'm like, and I had no idea at the time what that even meant. And
yeah.
I said, I don't, what do you mean? What are you talking about? He goes, you're paralyzed from at least the waist down, if not further up. And I'm like, I followed with a few profanities, you know, I didn't
want to hear
that.
Yeah.
And he said, but I need to go look at your X-rays again to be sure of it. And I'm like, sure what? He goes, to the extent, I just felt like I needed to tell you something. I'm like, okay. And so he left, and then he come back, and he goes, a couple of your X-rays, the reason why I can't tell you the full extent is a couple of your X-rays are not turning out just great. He said, so we're going to send you back down for just two quick X-rays. He said, sorry to put you through all these X-rays, and I don't remember any X-rays. I'm like, okay. And he said, so we'll send you down to get you a couple more. And I remember a guy coming in and getting me and then taking me down the hallway, but I don't remember getting the X-rays. So, and then here I am in the bed again going, did I go to sleep? What happened? You know? And I'm still kind of thinking I'm in some sort of dream.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing a woman talking in a crying-type voice, and I could recognize that was my mom's voice. So she was in the room with me, and she was very upset.
Yeah.
And he came back in, and he goes, oh, we're going to try something again.
Uh-huh.
I got the X-rays back, and something's not right. And I'm like, okay. He said, can you feel this? And I felt a very hard stabbing sensation in my foot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, ow, it hurts, dude, you know?
Yeah.
Interesting. And so he tried a few more, and I felt every bit of it.
Yeah.
And so he had this perplexed look on his face, and he goes, we owe you a huge apology. He goes, and I don't know how to explain this to you. I said, what's that? He goes, your X-rays were slightly blurry, but it was pretty clear that your neck was broken in the places that I told you.
Mm-hmm.
We ran you down, and we did your X-rays again, and they're not.
What?
I'm like, what the hell are you talking about, Doc? You know? And he's like, I don't understand this, but apparently you can feel that, so call it a miracle, call it what you want. And I'm like, okay, well, that's strange. And he walked off, and I blacked out again. And then I wake up again, sitting up in the chair, none of this paraphernalia on me, with this woman pouring cold liquid on my head. And she's like, and I turn to look, and I see my mom sitting there, and I'm like, oh, hi, Mom. She's like, what's up? I'm like, how long have you been there? And she's like, the whole time? What is wrong with you? Well, I don't know. I'm waking up. She goes, no, you've been sitting there. I'm like, no, I haven't. She goes, yeah. She goes, and she shook her head, and she was like, well, the doctor said you had a back concussion and you might be in and out. Okay. You know? And and I was like, ma'am, what is this ice water you're pouring on my head? And she's like, this is not ice water. No? She goes, I'm surprised you're okay with this. What do you mean? She goes, you got a very huge gash on top of your head, and this is
all.
And I look down on the side of me, and she's got, like, this big towel down the side of my body, and it is covered in blood and dirt and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, what is this? She goes, well, that's from your head.
Holy crap.
I got all this dirt and crap in my head. She goes, apparently from rolling around in a truck, sir. I'm like, oh, wow. And I still to this day have a couple pieces of glass embedded in my skin between my skull and my skin that didn't come out, you know. But after that seemed to amplify things a lot. And if you guys saw pictures of this truck, I don't know how I'm here. I really don't.
Really?
The truck was worth $11,000 and I managed to do $24,000 worth of damage to it.
God.
There's not a piece of this truck that's not destroyed. As a matter of fact, to give you an illustration, I went back I got released from the hospital the same night, walked out of there on my own two legs, went home, woke up the next morning, and you can just imagine how sore I was. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I felt like somebody beat me with a baseball bat all over come the next morning. It was just, oh, it was horrid. And,
yeah.
And then 2 days later, the Highway Patrol investigator came over, and he talked about what happened, and he said, we went around a 50-mile-an-hour corner doing 93 miles an hour. Stupid.
Oh,
And he said, I'm really shocked that you're even here.
Yeah.
And, of course, me not having any kind of memory, I don't remember any of the wreck. He started asking me questions about what we were doing, why we were going that fast, and I still don't know. And I said, you know, I really can't answer any of those questions, officer. I have no idea. I don't remember any of it.
Yeah.
And he's like, what do you remember? I remember being at a Sonic having a hamburger. And I remember my friend was there in the room because he wanted to talk to me at the same time. He goes, Mike, that was at like 6:30. And I'm like,
yeah.
Okay. And they're like, well, the wreck was at a little after midnight. I'm like, okay.
Wow.
Well, I remember the Sonic, you know. And to the day, I'm still that way. I remember the Sonic. That's it. And I've had little flashes of the wreck here and there, but you're talking 2 or 3 second gaps. And then they stay for a while, and then they go. And I don't know what to make of those. But
how is it amplified your ability, though?
I don't know. Outside of the fact of there's more to the story that I need to get into, the only way that I had to have any memory of this wreck was go talk to my friend that was in the truck with me to see if he is as oblivious as I am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this will be the strangest thing of my life because the DPS officer left and informed my mother that, you know, perhaps I need to be shown the truck, which we did the next day, and I saw the truck and...
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget looking at that truck going, what in the world? How am I going to lie? The truck's mangled that bad.
Uh-huh.
And it's just one of the things that should be in a magazine, you know, this guy survived, or and they walked away kind of video, you know. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And I talked to my friend the next day, and I said, say, Brian, he's like, what's up? I said, do you remember any of the wreck? He goes, you don't? No, I don't remember anything. And then it was like this sigh of relief, you know. He's like, I'm like, what's that? You know, what are you talking about? Are we in some kind of trouble? Because I'm getting written a ticket, and of course I'm in trouble with my parents because I destroyed my mom's truck. And, I was like, but you know, he was like sigh of relief, like there was something bigger at stake here, you know. And I'm not trying to downgrade the trouble I was in. I was in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And, but I was taking it as in some real legal trouble, like we're going to go to prison or something, you know, that I don't, and it's good that I don't know about it. You know, I'm like, dude, what is that sigh of relief for? He goes, just nothing, man. He said, I didn't really want to have that discussion. I'm like, I'm sorry, man. If you don't want to relive it, I get it. You know, he goes, no, I really don't. I was like, well, look, at some point I need to know, but I'm just going to drop it, you know?
Yeah.
And I just kind of figured he was still distraught about it. It's only been a couple of days. Let it go. And it did. I let it go for a while, a week or two even. And, you know, we went back to school. We were juniors in high school. And went back to school, let a couple weeks go by, and I hit him up. And I was like, hey, man, I need to talk to you. And he's like, okay. And one thing about it is that him and I were real close friends. And then, of course, he got real distant from me after that. So, and I thought maybe I did something to him, you know, like wreck a truck, you know?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But, you know, I thought he was upset at me over about that. And I was like, look, man, I didn't talk to you. I said, look, I am so sorry if I've upset you about this wreck. You know, and I need to apologize to you for that. And I know that he goes, no, it's not about that, man. He said, I really should have been driving the truck. You know, your mom lent us the truck and told me that, you know, I should drive because, and then that's when I remembered that I had a learner's permit and he had an actual driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
And like, oh, yeah, crap. Forgot about that. And he goes, I should have been driving, but I let you drive, and we both made bad decisions. He says, so really, man, you don't really owe me an apology, you know? I was like, well, okay, I appreciate that. I just noticed that you've been distant. He goes, well, it's not because of that, man. I said, okay, well, what is it? Just let it go, Mike. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, just let it go. He goes, I'm like, okay, I'll let it go, but I need to remember the wreck, Brian. I don't remember the wreck. And I feel like I need to know. I mean, do I get mm-hmm. these stitches in my eye? You know, life sucks.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
for a couple of weeks. You
yeah.
know, and I would love to remember it. At least you could tell me what happened out there. And he's like, I'm not going to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it, and I'm just not going to. I'm sorry,
oh.
but I'm just no.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, what is that? And he goes,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
he goes, it's just that. I said, look, the DPS officer says that we come around a corner too fast, and there was a cow in the road. You said there was a cow on the road, and we swerved to miss the cow, overcorrected, ended up wrecking out. And he goes, yeah, that's what I told him. What does that
oh.
mean? You know? And he goes, well, that's what I told him. I'm like, so is that the truth? And he goes, more or less. I'm like, and I could sense from him that that's not the truth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Brian, what happened out there, dude?
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it, man. I really don't. I said, Brian, and I had this overwhelming sense, and it was the first time in my life that I had this overwhelming sense, this inner voice,
mm-hmm.
that I didn't know what was about, but I could not escape the fact of asking Brian, what was in the road, Brian? Because I
yeah.
knew a cow was a lie. I just knew it. You
yeah.
know? I said, what was in the road, Brian? He goes, like I said, a cow. We both know you're lying, Brian.
Uh-huh.
Well, how do you know that? And that, for me, was confirmation. You know, how do you know
yeah.
that I'm lying, you know?
Yeah.
And I said,
yeah.
What, no, I definitely do, bub, you know? And he goes, no, I'm not going to talk about it. And as a matter of fact, I never am. And he turned and walked away from me. And I tried him two or three times to eventually, you know, we almost got to fight over it. But he just blatantly refused to talk about it.
Uh-huh.
So to keep it to, you know, keep it going, I know we got a lot to talk about, is speed ahead 15 years, you know?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. 15 years later, I hadn't seen the guy. I mean, we grew very distant. We graduated high school. He moved away to Houston. I stayed up here in Northeast Texas. You know, we just, you know, as teenagers do, they grow
mm-hmm.
apart. We become adults. He gets married, have kids. And
yeah.
we're just the guy you used to know, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And but he came to visit his family with another high school friend, and they stopped by my house just unexpectedly
mm-hmm.
out of the blue one night. And
mm-hmm.
I knocked on the door and opened it up, and both the guys' name were Brian. And I'm like, hey, it's Brian. I'm Brian. What's up? I'm guys.
Brian.
Beer,
uh-huh.
you know? Please
yeah.
come in. Let me get you a beer, you know?
And, yeah,
So, you know, we went outside, actually, and sat on the tailgate and just had beers like we were teenagers again, you know, except for, you know,
yeah.
now we can legally do that.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
catching up. And we did
uh-huh.
that for a couple hours, and then it hit me, the wreck.
Yeah.
I said, Brian, I got to ask you something. He goes, okay, what's that? He goes, so before I start, there's no trouble. It's 15 years later, you know?
Yeah.
If not 20, you know? No, it's more like, yeah, it's about 16. It's about 16 years later. I said, it's been
yeah.
15 plus years later, man. Nobody get in trouble. We're grown. You're married. You got kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm doing my thing. You know, everything's happy and hunky-dory. He goes, what do you? And he kind of chuckled and laughed. He goes, what is it that I have that you want to know, man? You know?
Uh-huh,
yeah.
uh-huh.
You know, he was just oblivious. He's like, what are you talking about? I said, the wreck back then, man.
Yeah.
And I could tell that the chime went off on him. You know, I said, he had done forgotten about it, you know, or put
uh-huh.
it in his memory or something. He goes, oh.
Uh-huh.
I said, I got to know, man. I got to know.
Yeah.
He goes, dude, that never came back to you? I said, no, man, it's lost. 15 years now, I do not know what happened out there that night. Not at all. Not
mm-hmm.
a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, man, you're right. It's been 15 years later. I'm like, and here I'm going, all right, you know?
Yeah.
He goes, back then I told you that I didn't want to talk about it and I would never talk about it. I was like, right. He goes, and he looked me straight in my eye and goes, and I'm still not.
Oh.
I'm like, dude, you gotta
no
be kidding
way.
Me, man. I said, 15 years, dude. You realize the things of my life, the all this time has went by. You know something that happened to me that I got scars and stuff for.
Yeah.
Emotional crap over, right?
Yeah.
And you know it. and you won't tell it to me.
Yeah.
What are you afraid of, Brian? I said, well, go ask me out here in the front yard having beer. What are you afraid of?
He goes, give me more beer.
I'm not afraid of nothing. And I went, nothing. He goes, Mike, look, here's the only thing I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to go get my truck and I'll leave if you ask me anything else. He said, do you understand? I said, I understand. All right. He goes, I saw something out there tonight that I don't want to remember. End of story. I'm like, okay, I'll let it go, dude. You know, it's good enough just to see you, man. I'm going to let it go, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, okay. Well, I went and throughout all this paranormal stuff, going to conferences and whatnot, I met a very wonderful guy who, God bless his soul, passed away about 3 or 4 years ago. And his name was John Gilliland. Fantastic man. But he did hypnotherapy. And I was talking to him one night at an event, and he's like, yeah, I can conjure up things that people think they've forgotten or things that they never knew. You know, you could put them in hypnosis, and it hit me that wreck.
Mm-hmm.
I said, so let me ask you something. What if somebody had a concussion and just doesn't remember a thing because it's just gone? And he goes, you need to understand something, how the brain works that I've studied. I said, he goes, if your eye saw it, it's in your memory. I said, contrary, sir, you know?
Yeah.
I said, if my eye saw it, I'm in touch enough with myself to conjure it up.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, maybe not. I'm like, okay, so what does this take? And I told him the whole story that I just told you, and he goes, I bet I can get it. I'm like, okay, how does that work? He goes, I'll put you under. And he goes, I do it differently. He said, you know, there are different forms of hypnosis. He said, the way I do it is you as the person who's hypnotized are in control. And he said, I know it sounds weird. He said, and you cannot explain it until the session's over. He said, but any time that you decide that you don't want to be hypnotized, just wake up.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you will be in control. I'm like, okay. And he goes, and you'll need to record it because sometimes people's memory is spotty about the whole thing. He said, so feel free to bring your video camera and record it all. I'm like, okay. So we did a session.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of other things that happened with an angel, and it was really cool. But to get right to this, he talked about the wreck, and he used a series of questions and the way that he did his work to suddenly just pull it out of me.
Yeah.
Coming around that corner doing about 80 or 90 miles an hour, the corner had a blind spot in it.
Mm-hmm.
And as the corner, and now keep in mind that I told him this, and it's still not in my memory. I have the video from it, of me telling it.
Yeah.
And come around the corner, there's a blind spot in the corner, meaning that you can't see all of it, right? Until you're committed in the corner is when you see it. And come around there, there was a man standing in the road with his face on fire.
Oh, my gosh. Oh.
And my friend in the truck screamed out, holy shit, what is that?
Yeah.
And I swerved to go around it because whatever it is stood there and had its hands telling us to stop. And we swerved around it and wrecked the truck.
Yeah.
Brian was in the truck. He looks at me. I was awake, laying on the steering wheel looking at him.
Uh-huh.
And my eyes recorded of him going, Mike, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? And him reaching over and grabbing my neck and going, oh my God, Mike, you're dead.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, oh, my God. And he starts freaking out. And he starts, you know, he couldn't open the door, so he kicked the window out. And he was hollering about this guy. He goes, man, I hope that guy on fire is not coming to this truck. Dude, we're going to both die. And he got out of the truck, and I could see looking at him looking around, like looking for wherever this guy is. And he's like, oh, I don't see him. I got to go get help. And he runs off. And my memory disappears from me because apparently I closed my eyes.
Yeah.
So at the end of that, according to what John pulled from me, is when I closed my eyes is when unconscious happened or actual death happened.
Mm-hmm.
And when reviving comes about is moving along in it that he pulled from a spirit guide from mine that explained the fact that God, our creator, decided that it wasn't my time, that I made a stupid decision that caused this, but it was influenced by a spirit. A spirit that is part of a plan and tried to stop me from developing, right?
Uh-huh.
That my neck was broken and that I was paralyzed, and the power that be decided that shouldn't happen either. And fixed it. John proceeded to tell me some stories about that he used to work in a hospital, and a lady came in once with a ruptured appendix and had to rush her into the emergency, you know, and do emergency surgery.
Yeah.
For them to cut her open and find no appendix.
Oh,
my God.
Wow.
With no surgery history whatsoever that there ever was one.
Right.
No surgery ever happened to remove an appendix. Her appendix had ruptured. They took a quick, you know, the sonogram or whatever they do and see it and go, oh, my gosh, we got to get this out of there because it's leaking all in your body. To open her up and go, well, where'd that go?
Oh, my
God. Those kinds of things. And there's all kind of medical mystery we can look at stuff up.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's off track.
Yeah.
But it started there. And after that wreck, I started seeing things, and then I witnessed several things, and it just kind of transposed to where I am today. I've been developing this thing for really since I was about 8 or 9 years old. It really kind of started heavy, you know, right at that wreck or right after that wreck. So I've been heavy in the paranormal, investigating, helping people for almost 20 years now.
Yeah.
And
you kind of like handle extreme hauntings, don't you? I mean, like you handle the really tough cases.
I will. You know, just kind of take them as they come. We've helped other teams before. You know, I'm not alone. I have, I have a small group of us that, because you can't do these type of cases alone. That's just really not smart.
What's the name of your group?
We call ourselves ART, as an ART, Afterlife Research Team. We're really small. You know, we haven't even committed to a website or anything like that. We've got cards with our telephone numbers. We try to stay very low-key and very humble to some degree. We don't want anybody to call us and get us to help them unless they have some feeling that they can trust us. We are one of those teams that like to say that we do this the right way. We like to stay, again, like I said, confidential, low-key. We work a lot of residential cases where people are scared by these things or haunted or sometimes worse. And we go in and work these things, and we never tell anybody their names. We never really tell anybody where they went. Other than a few people that we can trust, we know is not going to abuse that information. You know, I hate to have something in my house that's scaring the crap out of me and my family, and some team comes in and then blasts me on a blog talk radio show or puts me all over the internet. I just feel like that's disrespectful.
Yeah.
And we just kind of keep it that way. I can tell you some stories if you ask them. I'll leave the people's names out. You know, I'll tell you about where they're from. And, and unfortunately, you guys will just have to trust that I'm honest, you know? So,
I agree with that. That's kind of like what I do.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
This ability of mine, after honing it in, and you have no idea the hours that I've spent, all the places that I've went, all the meditations, all the different pseudosciences that I've meditated about, to help hone this gift, to understand it, and sometimes it's a curse, you know, but to understand it and realize what its purpose is. And I've learned consistently over and over and over again that I go to places, if I sense a spirit, if I sense it quickly, if I know what it is, I know what it looks like almost instantaneously, like walk in the building, go, spirit, fall back corner, looks like this, and sometimes I'll even get their name immediately. When that happens, the spirit's always dark, something dark, negative, and nasty. The human, the good spirits are usually takes a little work for me to do that. I can do it.
Yeah.
But you can't help but escape from the fact that somehow I've been called to this darker stuff.
Right.
I can pick it off, and I can tell what it is immediately. And that's my thing. And in a way, somehow or another, I've chose it in another way. The being that creates all things, you know, that some people call God, some people call other things. That's what he designed me to do. And so it's my calling, it's my work, and I don't fear these things because of that.
Right.
And apparently in some cases they really don't want me in the building. I walk in the building, I pick them off, and they start in on me or someone around me pretty fast. You know,
mm-hmm.
they react to me quick.
Yeah.
And you would think that I'm some sort of divine holy person, but I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just what they do. Hey,
yeah.
Look, I smoke cigarettes, I cuss, I have to clean up my language just to be here, but for some reason these darker spirits do not want me in their presence. They
huh.
do not want me in a house with them.
Uh-huh.
I worked with a couple of cases where people were possessed and it came out. And I've had stuff thrown at me, I've been cussed, I've been nose to nose with a woman before with black eyeballs. You know, it's
ooh.
I've seen a lot of it.
Yeah.
But I'm no more talking than you are, so
well, I'm just
I was going to ask you about the possessions. I've always read or have been told that there are different stages of possessions. Can you explain that?
Yeah, there are different stages of possession. Now, how those stages of possession, in my experience, so what I'm going to tell you, all my answers are going to be about my experience. It's not
right.
going to be more so about what I read in a book or what somebody else told me. It's from
mm-hmm.
casework. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I've understood about possessions is that they work in stages. Now, those stages are the three different normal stages that you see. You know, and it just left me, the three of them. Possession being the last one.
Attachment?
Oppression being the second one.
Attachment?
Yeah, basically. Well, here's how it goes. Let's just forget the role of three stages and try to name them. What
mm-hmm.
happens is that somehow or another, a person will either, one, invite themselves somehow or another through various ways the invitation can happen. It's
mm-hmm.
always, the person almost always knows what the invitation is.
Hmm.
They just
okay.
can't, they know what it is, but they
uh-huh.
can't recite it to you because what's been going on with the spirit has helped them forget. You see what I mean?
Oh.
So it's our job to dig into that to remember what it was. And
right.
that's always very key in one of these cases to try to unravel it. Because
mm-hmm.
in a way to unravel these things is to figure out what it's all hiding from you or
yep.
what it's trying to hide from you. And there's
mm-hmm.
always an invitation. This is just like, in a weird kind of way, you ever watch the old vampire movies where the vampire can't come into your house unless you invite him in?
Yes,
it's
the hypnotic
like
thing.
It's just
yeah.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the only time that it's not like that is when someone else has invited it into
mm-hmm.
a space, that person
mm-hmm.
has left that space either from death, you know, or moved
mm-hmm.
away,
mm-hmm.
or I've seen people that practice ceremonial magic in some ways conjure
yeah.
these things and put them in places, and then
mm-hmm.
they leave those places, and it's not attached to them. And poor, unforgiven, I'll just make up a name, Susie, moves in, and there it is.
Yeah.
You know, so those types of things are pretty rare for that to happen, but they do. And then it moves forward. Then once it's there and it starts the stage of getting to know the victim. So what happens is that the simple hauntings will start. You know, the person
mm-hmm.
will think that they have a ghost in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And when that's to create a fear environment or create a fear cage where
okay.
it gains power from that person being afraid of it.
Okay.
And it heightens that to a degree in which it starts to mess with the person psychologically, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The fear always morphs into something else. And sometimes it's either, most of the time, and I know you're going to find this weird, but it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, the fear turns into curiosity. The curiosity turns into an obsession. We worked a case with a teenage boy who could not stop getting on the internet and looking up demons, everyone he could possibly look up by any name that he could find, printed off and started himself a dictionary in a notepad or in a three-ring binder of these things.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And he was just addicted to it. So that's what it wants, is you addicted to it. And then the next
uh-huh.
thing that it does is talk you, and you keep in mind, you make these choices. This thing has no power over you, no
uh-huh.
power over the victim at all. The victim
mm-hmm.
gives them that power. But the thing about them giving them that power is they want them, the spirit wants the person, the victim, to be as unaware of that as possible, right?
Yes,
Yes.
So it's baby steps for this thing. It works its way in. These things are extremely intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
They're extremely old. They're very conniving. You think of the best con artist you can possibly find who's been practicing for a million years.
Right.
Just that quick, that cunning.
Yeah.
And they work into that part until, and after they get the obsession going, the first stage is still going on. The haunting still happens. You know, it doesn't just, like, stop one stage and go to another.
Mm-hmm.
And it can, and sometimes it does. It'll stop the first stage and go to the other, and then it'll bring the first stage back and dance back and forth. That's to keep the confusion going, right? And then after it does that, it starts to isolate the person. It starts to whisper in you that your family hates you, right? And then it does this. It moves on to the family members, or where, you know, you guys that work in spirits know that you can walk into a haunted location and suddenly feel angry or sad.
Yeah.
Or anything like this, and it's a spirit doing it to you. Putting that false impression on you, and you to feel a way that is alien to you. Well, these things are relentless, and they're so much better at it than human spirits are. And, and they got nothing else better to do than mess with you. So when you go to bed at night, it doesn't have to sleep. These things don't sleep. They don't have a body to need to sleep. They don't need things that the human body needs. So they can go at you 24/7, 365, and do it in the shadows.
Yeah.
And then so it starts the family fights. It separates the marriages, makes the kids hate the mom, make the mom hate the kids. And this is how you as an investigator can identify this, because when you know something's bad there, start looking for the person that's the odd man out. And the person in the house that's the odd man out is most likely the victim.
Oh.
Most likely. Sometimes it's a ploy. I mean, this is, gets real intricate, because sometimes it's a ploy. Sometimes it wants you as an investigator to think something is going on so you don't figure it out.
Yeah.
And we've been played before, you know.
Yeah.
When you zero in on a person and things start not making sense. And they start not making sense, then I got to use what I am to try to figure it out. And there's other people in our group that have certain set of abilities that complement mine but are different. And we're good enough, and we trust each other as soldiers on a battlefield would, you know. Not to use that comparison. Not to use that comparison that we're like soldiers on a battlefield, because those guys are awesome. But but the you're in a spiritual warfare, not a literal one, you know.
Right.
So we trust each other with each other's well-being, you know, to put our heads together and start making sense of things. And you have to. You have to know these things. You have to do this casework. You have to be connected to people that have done this casework. Because the things that you watch on the TV and most of the books you read, that's just somebody trying to give you an idea.
Right.
Anybody that does this for real is going to be just as kind of vague as I am right now. And the reason why I'm not giving you every little detail or lay it all out for you is that what we do is very dangerous.
Right.
It's dangerous to a person spiritually.
Yep.
Health-wise,
yep.
Clients commit suicide here, man. You know, it's happened. And so, you know, this is a very serious thing. And but anyway, move past that is that it isolates a person. And once it isolates that person, this is when the bad stuff starts. This is when it starts to want to take over.
Ooh.
This is when it starts to make, and some most of the time, it starts to make friends with the person. One case in particular, the spirit created two other spirits. It made a white and a dark one. Meaning that what was really happening here is that the dark spirit would show up and cause chaos, right? And then the white spirit would show up afterwards and run the dark spirit off and cause a very peaceful environment. So the white spirit was the helper, right? No, it's a front. You see the con artist at work.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
It's to gain trust.
Yes.
To gain trust until the fact that this person trusts the white spirit with everything it is, because it's done nothing but good for me the entire time.
Oh,
but it's
no.
But it's been asking the person to do things. These things cannot 100% at all to a T make themselves out to be the perfect good spirit. There's always a telltale in it. They always ask something like an angel wouldn't ask you to do. An angel's not going to ask you to go steal $40 out of your grandma's wallet. Not going to do that, right? Not going to ask you to take mom's credit card and order some stuff so you can get in trouble. Not going to do that. The little white spirit did, right? And that's what you try to explain it to the client, because at that point, when we walked into the scenario, seeing all that going on, it was at that point where possession was going to happen. And generally, when we get these cases, it's already pretty far, because everybody's tried everything. You know, the people have called the paranormal team. The paranormal team has come in, documented a bunch of evidence. It showed itself to them, spit the crap out of the paranormal team. The paranormal team gets fearful, and they run out, or they leave, or go, F that. I didn't sign up for this. I wanted to sign up, find proof of ghosts, not worse. You know?
Right.
Sometimes paranormal teams will be connected to a person like me, and there's a bunch of us out there that do this. But, and they'll call me and go, hey, Mike, you need to go handle this over here because I'm not built for that. And I'm, okay. And I'll pick it up.
Do you actually perform exorcisms?
No. I have not had to do that yet, thank the Lord above, right? We're connected with some clergy people, and when it gets to that point, it's very, very wise. I'm trying to decide what to say and what not. It's very wise for you to connect yourself with a person that's deep into some sort of clergy that has experience with possessions and has experience with exorcisms from somebody who has done those things before them. It's like a rite of passage, if you will.
Yeah.
The best way to learn how to do an exorcism is from somebody else that has been successful at it. And that person before them was successful at it. So it's kind of like a pass-me-down thing. And that does not mean that a person like me cannot conduct an exorcism because the powers that be give us every right to do that. If you don't know what you're doing, just because you can don't mean you should. And because what you do at that point is, you know, when we do this kind of work, you have to think about a lot of things. And a lot of things is you got to have nerves of steel and a lot of duck feathers. And you have to keep in mind of your family because I've had to go around and attack my family. They will do it. Once you get in their way, they're going to get rid of you.
Yeah.
One way or another, it's determined. Yeah. I'm going to get rid of Mike.
Yeah.
Somehow or another.
Yeah.
And I have to be able to take that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I would say to people not to get into this work, you know, to say the scary stuff. It's a terrible situation to have a spirit affliction going on with your family.
Yes.
And you know psychically, if you go over there and intervene, that it's going to keep doing it. Right?
Yeah.
And it's going to keep it worse because it's going to get your attention over there. So the best thing to do in that scenario, while your mother or your sister that you love very much is being attacked spiritually, is to let it be, you know, and it will move. So you have to let it be there. So keep in mind, anybody's listening that might want to get in this work, if you can't just let a spirit attack your parents for some time, leave this work alone, you know. These things will weigh a toll on you. People, my biggest fear about doing these kind of shows publicly and telling all these kind of details is that everybody has a fascination with the dark side, if you will. That would be so cool to have this awesome paranormal activity. I've had them rearrange an entire living room of furniture with me standing in the adjacent room. In like 4 seconds, you're boom! And you walk over there and the whole room's rearranged. You're like, wow. To a paranormal investigator, for that to happen and you to catch that is the holy grail, right?
Right,
What to catch, right? Yeah, but those people, like, they get so into the, oh, my God, I want to catch it on camera so bad that they don't take in the fact what you're inviting in your life.
That's
you know?
Right.
Sometimes
it's kind of
better not to know.
Yeah.
Do what?
Wouldn't you say it's kind of a seduction process?
Yeah, it's kind of like, how can I put it in a way in an analogy that makes sense? Well, here you go. This is not exactly appropriate, but it's the best sex you've ever had with a person you clearly don't need to be around.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
people have been in those relationships before. Oh, this person's a completely worthless person, but they give me this so much that I just can't get away. You know?
Right, yeah.
Except for now your life's at stake instead of just this person. You know what I mean?
Right,
and,
yeah.
There's things going around, you know, that I've heard it time and time again, that spirits cannot harm you.
Mm-hmm.
That's false.
Yeah.
Spirits cannot kill you. Well, that's for the most part true, right?
Mm-hmm.
These things have never, that I've ever heard of or ever been around, actually blatantly killed somebody, right?
Mm-hmm.
These things have caused things to happen in ways and people died.
Yes.
Yes. You know,
influence.
Made bad decisions.
Uh-huh.
Influence. You know,
the whole
devil on your one shoulder and the angel on your other shoulder, you know?
Yep,
you know?
Yep.
That kind of business, except for the devil on your shoulder is not this pretty fun thing. You know, it's a real deal.
Yeah.
So probably the best advice that we could give people is to basically don't invite anything in, such as using Ouija board, anything to do with satanic symbols or anything like that. Don't invite anything in. Don't play with fire.
Don't play with the fire. And now that brings up another subject. You said the Ouija word. Now, there are going to be paranormal investigators, I'm sure, listening to your show. And there's going to be other people that I would be sure to listen to your show that's going to say, hey, your ghost box or any other equipment that you've got is the same thing as a Ouija board.
Mm-hmm.
And they have every right to think that.
Yeah.
Because for what you see, a Ouija board is spiritual connection to the other side, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you use paranormal equipment, and it's doing the same thing, right? You know, you would generally like to believe that from a person and an analytical point of view. I cannot express to you how wrong you are. And the reason why is the nature of the device.
Right.
Now, before I go any further, I will tell you that your piece of equipment can turn into be just as dangerous as a Ouija board. It depends upon the intention of the person using it.
Yes.
And, that can change things dramatically. It's always the intention, and it's always the person, right? You can get yourself in trouble.
Yes.
Really, really, really quick, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm wondering, I hate to cut you off, but we're getting really short on time, and I don't know if we have a time extension, but would you be interested in coming back and talking to us again? Because we're just starting to get into the meat and potatoes of the topic, and we have to go, but I would love for you to come back and talk to us. And
I would
love
to continue it up. It's anybody that's wanting to hear this stuff, anybody that wants to be educated,
yes.
My big thing to hope to this is that it hits somebody that may be having a problem that I can help.
Yes.
And I'm just a guy that I tell it like it is, though. That's the thing, you know?
Yeah. Is there a contact number or email that you'd like to present to people so they can get in touch with you if they need to?
If you have something that you need to talk to me about that's very important and you feel like you need to reach me out, get your pencils out, everybody that's listening. So here we go.
Get up.
Area code 903-315-7749. That is my personal cell phone number. I just put my personal cell phone number on a Blog Talk Radio show, and I don't care to do that. I don't care to do that because I'll put myself out there. All I ask you is if you need some help, put yourself out here a little bit by just contacting me. Reach out to me. We will do what we can to help you. Anybody, the paranormal investigators that have something that they need to know about, if I can help you in your casework, if I can help you train you in my 20 years experience, call the number. Text me, really. That's the best thing to do. I might not answer a phone call out of the blue. So texting me is good. I always text back. Sometimes I'm a little slow. But, yeah, please contact me. You know,
okay.
If I can help you, I know somebody that can. You know,
okay.
So.
Thank you. Thank you for everything, but we are out of time.
Yeah.
Oh.
And we will have you back on as soon as we can.
And we'll see you at the Tyler Paracon.
Oh, yes.
Go ahead.
I was going to say we will see you in Tyler, Texas, at the Tyler Paracon on April 22nd and 23rd. And also our leader, Selena Roan, and Veronica will be speaking at that Paracon.
Yay. Well, are you there? Okay, well, we'll see you then, okay?
Yes, ma'am. Y'all have a good night. Thank you for having me.
Thanks.
You too.
Thanks for coming.
Yes, ma'am. We'll talk to you in a bit.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.